Good morning, good morning, good morning. And thank you for joining me on another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing show for you today. Our guests have come together to provide you with information, with education, to also discuss what's going on in the world and their world. So I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that's to go ahead and share this show because friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show, because I know you're going to want to share this show. I don't know what's going to happen, but it's always great. I'm going to go ahead and introduce you to our first guest. Our first guest has been here before. We loved having her. We learned a lot about her, and she's back again. I'm going to introduce you to Valerie Friedlander. She is an IPEC certified professional coach, also energy leadership master practitioner. Good morning, Valerie. How are you?
Good morning. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
You are welcome. Thank you for coming back. We learned a lot from you the last time, but one of the things that I pointed out is how happy you are, how bubbly you are, and you seem to bring a joy to every conversation. But for those who don't know you, I'm just going to give you the opportunity to tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are.
Well, as you already mentioned, I'm a certified life coach, and I primarily work with women, high achieving women who are also moms, who are working on breaking through patterns that aren't serving them and creating a more aligned life that brings into harmony all the different components of their life. They're often people who value social justice, who value authentic connection, who really want to shift their own personal paradigm so that they can be more effective in shifting the world.
So, do you feel with everything going on in the world right now that that's what we need more of? People who are more interested in the social impact?
Yes, absolutely. And people who recognize that a big part of being able to make a social impact is about doing your own work, because the micro affects the macro. And when we aren't doing that work of listening and asking those deeper questions of ourselves, we often find that we say things that impact others in ways that maybe we didn't intend. And especially coming to this as a white woman, doing that work is especially important, and knowing that it's important to listen. And when we want to give advice and say things and act from our emotional spaces instead of taking that step back and knowing that our emotions are information about us. And we need to take a look at those things before we start acting just from that, assuming that our emotions are based in external factors. They're based on our internal reality. Learn from those and then take action based on information, all the different forms of information. And some of that is listening.
Yes, sometimes we do have to learn how to listen. One of the most difficult aspects for me, because I'm just known for telling people what they should do, how they should do it, what's right, what's wrong. I made a long post on Friday before Friday's show and talked about how I felt on what's going on in the world. But at the end, what I brought to the show was that at the end of the day, love wins. And that's what I like to remind people. I'm going to come back to you, Valerie, but I also want to go and introduce our next guest, Nika Brown. She is the founder and CEO of Innovative Supplies Worldwide. Good morning, Ms. Brown. How are you?
Hi, happy rising. I'm doing really good. Thank you for having me today.
You are welcome. Thank you for joining us. Tell us a little bit about, we talked a little bit about this before the show, but you have your vision board behind you. Tell us a little bit about your board, who you are, and what you do.
Yes, so vision boarding is very important to me. When I was in the military for 9 years, the last 3 years, I was jumping out of airplanes with the 82nd Airborne Division. And I got a couple of concussions that impacted my ability to learn when it comes to reading. And I feel I'm more visionary now when it comes to how I study and learn. And so when it comes to my business and where I want to envision going in life, I put pictures on a board to kind of help draw out what I can't say in words as much. Because with traumatic brain injury, you do lose some ability to have words come into play and into your mind. But with my company, what I do is manufacture stationery notebooks here in the United States of America. And I have a social impact behind it as well when I hire at-risk youth to help with the manufacturing, to help with the inventory control, and then also with the packaging and sending them out to customers and email marketing.
Wow, I think we're definitely going to be discussing social impact today. But I want to go back to one of the things that you said. You had this injury. You weren't able to receive the information the way you were before. And I always ask this, and it's not a judgment, but why then go into business? So many other people would have just sat at home, felt sorry for themselves, felt like, you know, well, oh, woe is me. What made you decide to go out and make a social impact into the world, in the world?
Really, it was the amount of income that I was now left with after my disability. The military does provide disability income, but it was really like a fourth of my income. And with me being a single parent, I knew I was not going to be able to sustain me and my daughter on that income with that disability. So a lot of people think that, you know, when you're disabled, you can't work anymore. No, sometimes you have to, because that amount of income is not enough to sustain yourself. And then also, the military put over $1 million of training into me. So it just felt like it would be unjust to just leave that $1 million with the military when I left and not transfer that to the next generation of leaders that are coming behind me.
How long have you been in business?
I've been in business, next month will be 4 years.
Wow, congratulations. I know for businesses, it's usually like that first couple of months, then the 2 years, and then kind of the 5 years. So in each of those time frames is like all these different transitions. So you're at the 4 year mark. How do you feel business is going for you?
I feel business is going great. I just applied recently for a remote program, Tulsa Remote, where they pay you to check out their city for a year, and they give you a monthly stipend. And this is actually the first little bit of investment income, I guess you can say, I've gotten when it comes to raising capital for my company, because we know it's challenging for women entrepreneurs to get venture capital. And so it took me leaving my city, moving to another city, just to even get, you know, this little bit of capital that I'm being provided. But it's been a peace of mind ever since we got here.
Well, that's wonderful. I might have to head to Tulsa myself to get a little piece of that pie. We never know. we'll be neighbors. But I want to go ahead and I'm going to come back, but I want to introduce our next guest, Sabria Dobbins, and she's a founder and CEO as well of her own company, Life Discovery. Good morning, Sabria. How are you?
I am wonderful, Sharifa. Thanks for having me.
You are welcome. I love watching the backgrounds for some reason. Like, that's the highlight of my morning, is just look at someone's background, look at their smile. And we have all these lovely ladies on just this morning. But tell us a little bit about yourself, Sabria, and what you do.
Yes. So I am a very passionate, driven millennial entrepreneur. Everybody always has this idea of who we are. And I have been finding myself more than I ever have before when I launched my company, Project Passport. I feel like my life just began in the last year, I would say, because before I was trying to fit the status quo and trying to fit a box. I was the 4.0 graduate from college, and my mental health and wellness was tanking every year as I tried to maintain a facade, trying to be someone that just had the look, had the part for the world, but it wasn't true to who I was. So I launched my company, Project Passport. I'm a life discovery expert for it, as well as the founder. And it's a company that provides mental empowerment retreats and events for women mainly. We do help some men, but for mainly women, to help them regain control of their lives and to gain the joy they're entitled to. Many people do not think that they're entitled to joy on a daily basis. Many people don't think it's possible. And the work that I do is helping people get those tools and those resources and to get that mindset to let them know that they are in the driver's seats of their lives. They're in that driver's seat. And for me, that's something that I had to even learn for myself.
How long have you been in business?
I actually launched in February of 2019. So I'm still a baby.
you're still a baby in more ways than one, but that's great because I love to see the babies and the millennials and the young people going into that entrepreneur, that business owner space. Too often what we're told is you go to high school, go to college, get a job, you know, but we don't often look at the whole business owner working for yourself, being self-employed. But to me, why I'm so passionate about it is because that's how you create jobs. Anyone can go and get a job. But when you're thinking about society as a whole or society at large, is how do I help other people? Now, with your business, being in business for a year, 2019 most likely was a pretty good year. Then 2020 hit. You know, it's like 2020 just came in and just wrecked everyone's lives. Yeah. How were you able to remain in business, remain so joyful, remain smiling?
So I'm not gonna lie to you. I was devastated in the beginning of the year. So we had worked so hard to build up our retreats. We had a Kenya retreat lined up for actually this July. And that was my very first international retreat that I'd be hosting with the people that we had signed up. So it was quite devastating. We had to cancel it and postpone it to 2021. And we also had events lined up. I was doing work with the National Alliance on Mental Illness and big companies. We were gonna be partnering and doing some great things, and all of that was taken away. So at first, I'm not gonna lie to you, I didn't do well. You know, I cried for weeks. I was in a really dark spot and I almost said, I just wanna forget it all. And I admit it, I just wanted to just say, you know, let's pretend like this never happened. I haven't been in it that deep. So let's just pretend like this never happened. And I took a 2-week hiatus and it changed my life. I just stopped as much as I could, canceled all appointments, didn't do much of anything, just to kind of have that woo-saw with myself. And believe it or not, by the time that hiatus was over, I was itching to get back into Project Passport and get back into a more inspired space. And I ended up launching virtual retreats of what we do. And within a day or two of me getting out of my hiatus, I had a company client that said, I need virtual, or someone posted, I need virtual retreats for my team. I commented, not expecting them to contact me, and they actually did. And I ended up doing 4 retreats for them so far virtually. And I've been doing virtual retreats with individuals as well. And it's totally changed the model that I thought we were going to have to something even better. So I'm very grateful in a really crazy way that this has happened for the business, but at the same time, it was not the easiest path when we first transitioned over.
Yes, but even with the hiatus, you took 2 weeks, you kind of let your emotions come, let your emotions go, whatever you were feeling. And then you said, you know what, I'm not going to give up. I'm not going to give in. I'm going to get back up out there and start again. And you found a way to pivot in business. Now, I wanted to introduce these 3 ladies for a reason, to kind of get their views. And one of the things that I've seen is that I can always get the women as guests on the show. It's the men who are like, I don't know. I don't know if I want to talk. I don't know if I want to say anything, where the women are like, yes, let me talk about my business. Let me talk about my life. And it's not all just business. I know one of the things that we're going to discuss today is social impact. But I want to introduce our next guest, Mr. Sir Brody. If you don't know him, then you haven't been watching TV, because he is an amazing actor. He's an amazing philanthropist, as well as a producer. And I want to welcome him to today's show and also get his thoughts. Good morning, Sir Brody. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. And see, I recognize you from the picture behind you. Like, if I saw you, I'm like, oh my God, he looks familiar. But it's that look in that picture that I'm like, okay, I know who you are.
Well, the funny thing is, I was playing around with Zoom, because this is probably like my 3rd Zoom call. And I was playing around. Now I don't know how to get the picture, because you can put a background back there. Now I don't even know how to get it off. It's like, I've been having business meetings with this picture back there, and I just don't know how to get it off.
That's okay. We're going to send one of the young people to help you. But I like it. I like the look. It's that I mean business look.
Yeah. But I'm very happy to be here. I really didn't know what to expect. And I just heard the comment you said about the men don't like to talk. I'm probably one of those men that's kind of like don't really like to talk, especially about social issues and getting into the entertainment industry. We've all been afraid to kind of speak our mind, because you might get blacklisted. Different things may happen to you that's going to stifle your career. And we've kind of had to work in fear of that pretty much. And like the events now that are happening is so emotional, it's hard not to say something, mm-hmm. you know? And I just felt like it's my responsibility that I've been given a platform that I can speak and mm-hmm. speak from my heart and how I feel.
Well, I appreciate that. And I know exactly what you mean, because I've been not wanting to speak a whole lot, because it seems like, and this is just me, and I want your opinion on this, is just like, it's so many different sides of the coin. You know, I'm more like, let's just be at peace. And then it is the whole other side that's like, okay, we're at peace. And then this happens to us and we weren't bothering anybody. I'm like, okay, but look at this. And then it's always a response to that. And it's, I just want peace, like peace on earth. Like, that's me. I'm this hopeful person that just believes that we can find, you know, some semblance of peace. When you have spoken out, or if you've spoken out, what are some of the things that you've been able to say to people?
A lot of the speaking that I've done recently has just kind of been in closed circles with friends and colleagues that we're just kind of close and we're just talking with each other. One of the things I decided yesterday, I was feeling so down. It was Sunday and I was like, you know, my father passed away in 2009. And I tell a lot of people's story because they go, is Sir Brody your real name? And I'm like, no, that's not my birth name. But I gave my name Sir Brody to honor my father, who, when he was passing away, he gave me the responsibility to make a lot of decisions about his transition. And one of those decisions I had to make was to decide when to send him to hospice. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to do that because I felt like I was giving him his death penalty. But he told me I was his oldest and that I was going to have to do it. And that it was just my duty. So the Sir came about because I thought about Sir Lancelot protecting the kingdom for King Arthur. And I felt like my dad knighted me to protect our name, our legacy, and to be the head of our family now that he's passing away. So yesterday I was riding, I was thinking, what can I do? You know, I'm not the type to get out and march and do a lot of things. And I was like, what can I do? And I was like, the only thing that I know that I can do is start in my home, start with my family. So I called my younger brother, I called my son, I called my nephews, and I spoke to each one of them individually, mainly because I had a feeling yesterday, I wish I could talk to my daddy, mm-hmm. right? And then I was like, I gotta be my daddy to my brothers and my nephews. So I called them up and just let them vent to me. Talk to me, like, let your emotions out. I was afraid, I didn't want them to be out in all the rioting and doing a lot of things that put them in harm's way. But I know that people have to release. They have to let these emotions out. So I kind of wanted to be that person for them. And I figured that would be the start for me to just be a release for them so that they can come and speak to me.
Mm, I think that was beautiful. What was the basic consensus from the people you spoke to, that they needed it, that they are glad you took that time and that you're being the father figure for them?
Yeah, a lot. I know that they look up to me a lot because of the acting and being on TV and so forth. So me calling them, they was very thankful. I guess my nephew, who's a freshman in college, mm-hmm. and they had to leave school. So he's kind of messed up his freshman year. He's a football player. So you don't know how things are going to go in the fall. And I was talking to him and he was assuring me that he's not out doing anything stupid. He's been working a job, just preparing himself to be able to go back to school. And he just had a light, because the younger generation, they know of the history, but they really don't know. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of things. We're from a small town in North Carolina. And that's where I'm at now. I moved to Los Angeles, but when the coronavirus pandemic started, one of the things I wanted to do was be closer to my family. So I came home to my hometown, Lexington, North Carolina, to my sisters, to be near my family, you know, for support and just to be here if they needed me. But he was having a lot of questions about the racial aspect of it, because we grew up, we have white friends, black friends, and we're in a small country town. There's races. We've seen it all our life, you know, but it's kind of like hit a ceiling now. Like you got to address it. And he was questioning me about the Ku Klux Klan, and they were out and about marching. And we used to, as kids, we would watch them march. And back then, a lot of times they wouldn't wear hoodies. We'd see some of the people we were in class with, some of the people that we knew from the stores and school, and they just marching. You know, as a kid, you just kind of look at it and like, what are they doing? So my nephew really didn't understand a lot that's going on. So he just kind of wanted clarity on how we should move, how we should react. And I told him to basically focus on the things that he can do and the changes that he can make in his personal life, and focus on his education and stay working, build your money, and like things that we weren't taught about: finances, building wealth. And I told him to focus on those things. Don't try to work a job to go buy a car, you know, put your money away, stay focused on your education. And yeah, there's going to be people out here protesting on both sides. And I think it's fair for everyone to be able to express their opinion. I even think the Ku Klux Klan has the right to express their opinion, but everybody does. And I don't know. I'm just kind of focused on my individual family, because that's where I feel like I can have the most impact, is with my family. And as we all focus in on our own homes, then that'll begin. It's kind of like a micro effect. The micro effect is I focus on me and my house first. And then as I work on that, they can affect everyone else around them. I feel like I'm talking in circles because my
No, I thought it was beautiful. And I also believe, and this is just me, that it had to be kind of cathartic, you know, to kind of get that message out and to talk and to speak to other people about what you're feeling and what, you know, you're going through. So I think it's a wonderful point. But I think, and what you're saying is exactly what Valerie was saying earlier about having to work on ourselves first. And one of the things that I found interesting when Valerie spoke, and let me just say this before I go back to Valerie, is, again, I don't select the guests for a show. The guests select the date they would like to appear, and I always see patterns of who, you know, shows up. It's like a common theme. And so I just wanted to say that, because it just so happens that on this show, Valerie is the only white person, the only person that is not African-American, but it's just the way the cookie crumbled. It's just the way it happened. But I'm glad you're here, Valerie. But one of the things that I noticed is that when you were mentioned, you said, when you were speaking, you said, as a white person or as a white lady. And as I've seen so many people on Friday's show, the lady said the same thing. As a white lady, I'm going to be out on the corner of Thousand Oaks protesting. And it just seems like I keep hearing more and more white people say, as a white person. Why the need, I guess? I'm just curious.
This is such a con. I was nervous, I have to say, because I signed up for this and I had no idea that we were, you know, all the things that are going on. Mm-hmm. But I have to trust the universe has a plan that's bigger than me. So I don't speak for everybody. But for myself, I've done a lot of work. I also grew up with such a diversity in friends. I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee, and the whole idea of colorblindness and all of that, like there's so many components that I just, I thought those were like, that was what we needed to aim for. And I studied sociology growing up or in college, and that coupled, you know, working on a dialogue center and then learning more. And as the discussion has unfolded, it's become the idea of understanding racism and systemic racism is actually is saying the same thing, because mm-hmm. it's about it is systemic. I mean, race, it's just the same thing. So to acknowledge that it's there, to, you know, to try and pretend that it's not and I don't see it is I'm ignoring a responsibility of having privilege and not having to think about like there's a difference in the way society and what's ingrained cognitively. Like I do a lot of work in my work around patterns mm-hmm. and understanding our own patterns of perception. And so all of our life experience up until this point, and even into generations, there are certain synaptic connections that are inherited because of trauma, especially. And they create patterns of the way we see the world. And thus that perception triggers a thought, synaptic connection, often to our limbic system, into subconscious realm that evokes an emotion. And that emotion then we usually interpret the emotion in our subconscious again, and then we act. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my work with people is around bringing those subconscious things into consciousness, to notice, to ask questions more deeply, instead of just assuming that because the way I see it is the way it is. Like right. if I see somebody trip, I might have the judgment, oh, they're so clumsy. Mm-hmm. Or somebody else might look at that and go, oh gosh, there's something in the road. They must have fallen over. You know, so there's so many different ways of seeing things. And a lot of times we think things are facts that aren't facts, and we don't question ourselves and we don't take a look at things. So I think there's a lot more of a movement to call things out and to identify and to say, I acknowledge that I exist in a space within our society that has a certain amount of privilege just by being what it is, mm-hmm. is important. And I think in some ways it's also a selfish thing of saying, like, I want you to know that I'm paying attention, mm-hmm. and that makes that about me. But there's so many different ways of engaging. There's so many emotions around this. So it's very uncomfortable to speak out. I was, what Sir Brody was saying about like how saying something in a public way, there are so many different opinions from so many different people, people of color, people, white people, like everybody has opinions, and you're going to offend somebody at some point, but being imperfect, I think, is important, and being okay with that and having conversations and being willing to put your foot in your mouth and go, oh, look, I put my foot in my mouth. Okay, now what do I want to learn from that? Instead of thinking of it as I'm a bad person, say I did something that hurt somebody else and I can apologize for that and I can learn from it.
Can I add to Valerie? I appreciate what Valerie says about that, because I had a lady, she was, you know, not of color, and she posted, oh, you know, I'm just, everything's going on right now and it's all stressed out. So, and I hate all that stuff happening, but I'm just going to focus on this stuff and let's just focus on the happy things. And that was it. And for me, it was a trigger moment, you know, because, you know, she's a, you know, non-minority person saying that, oh, well, let's just focus on happy moments right now. I'm good. And it kind of felt, and I said back to her, I said, you know, I wish that I could just say, oh, let's just focus on something happy right now. Because I mean, yes, I do have my good moments with all of this, but this, my family's lives, my loved ones, my life all depends on us making this change. Like right now, this is, I would say it's almost like the Emmett Till of our time, the new kind of uprising that occurred in history that caused the small changes we had back then. And now we're on that next level. So I appreciate you saying that, you know, it's a vulnerable place for you to be, absolutely, as a white woman, but I'm so grateful that you're willing to even go there and do that, because many people are just like, oh, all this stuff is bad, let's just focus on the good. But as an African-American woman, I don't get that choice, whether I like it or not. So thank you.
Thank you. And, you know, I think that there's a quote by Lila Watson that I came across that says, if you've come here to help me, you're wasting your time. But if you've come because your liberation is bound up with mine, then let us work together. And I think that as a human race, that's true. So my work isn't about giving advice or fixing people. It's about listening and knowing that all of us doing our work and doing it together as a community and as individuals are based on our ability to be free in the world and be our true selves, like the work that you do.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Nikia, what is your thoughts?
I took equal opportunity leaders course in the military for a week, and it was very intensive learning about different cultures and ethnicities and giving space to allowing everyone to express themselves. It was very eye-opening for me to leave the military with such a diverse group of people that work in the military, to coming out of the military and seeing how lackadaisical equal opportunity still is in America. And it wasn't something that I felt like the military prepared me to expect when I got out. I kind of thought that when I left the military, I would see equal opportunity everywhere, and that just wasn't the case. I guess I was very naive to thinking that that was going to be that. So it's very eye-opening just to see the differences in the two.
What was interesting to me and what was eye-opening to me is, I think over the past weekend, it is one of those times where I've had the most response to something that has happened in the world as far as the protesting and as far as the looting. In the past, I've been more supportive of it. In the past, I've been more, to a certain extent, like, okay, they're out there protesting. What I saw is a people, and when I say a people, I don't mean Black people or white people. I mean people in general who have been locked up, been quarantined for 60 days. The quarantine took a very emotional toll on everyone. It took a financial toll on everyone. And then you have this horrendous, horrendous tragedy that occurs. And people, because they're already on edge, to me, I felt like they needed to express their emotions. They needed to express their thoughts. But what I saw is, in my opinion, this is why I'm like Sir Brody, is like certain things you say, you can't unsay, especially in certain industries. But what I saw was that the one thing that was impacted more than anything else was the businesses. I'm in Long Beach, California. I don't know if anyone saw on the news, but Long Beach, Santa Monica, these were two cities in Los Angeles County that were hit the hardest. And you have people who are looting and destroying property and destroying the stores. And it's like, okay, not only that, but they put a curfew in for 6 p.m. last night. So everyone had to be off the streets. All the businesses had to close. And because of my day yesterday, I didn't even realize until the alert goes off at about 5:45 that there's a curfew. And so I didn't think about it. I hear the alert, okay. And I said, you know what? I'm finished my day. I'm ready to get something to eat. And there's no restaurant open. Everything is forced to close. And so you've now affected so many other people and so many other businesses. And so my question always comes back to, have you achieved what you wanted to achieve? Because when I saw people like Dr. Martin Luther King, these people peacefully protested and there was a specific goal in mind. And so I just want to go, in this process, have we harmed more people than we've helped? Or have we just been able to show our dissatisfaction which we already know is systematic racism? That was my thoughts.
I think it's important to recognize that there are also other groups involved that are taking advantage of the situation. It's not just people protesting what happened or systemic racism or any of that. There are other groups that are engaging and using this as an opportunity to incite more things, and that tends to feed on itself. So, you know, one person throws something and then suddenly it's a snowball effect.
I think it has a lot to do with the fact that we're in the midst of a pandemic and this is happening. I think the compounding effect is out of this world, and a lot of people aren't seeing those layers, because 40 million plus people have filed for unemployment. I'm sure there's a lot more. You have the $1,200 measly stimulus check that I'm sure did not help many people. And then you have the fact that many people are not getting their unemployment. You know, a lot, especially North Carolina, a lot of people in my state, North Carolina, I'm in Raleigh, are not getting their money for unemployment, and they're getting denied and rejected constantly. So I think that the looting and things like that wouldn't probably have been so bad had it not been the midst of a pandemic. I mean, look at Katrina, similar things happened, but then the aid was not coming like they should have received out there. So I think that this whole impact, even the businesses should be able to know that the government and their insurances, hopefully the government, if anything though, would be able to step in, but the government has not done what they need to do. So I think this is a product of a lot of things going on, a lot of missing layers and pieces to the puzzle, the government, you know, leaders inciting more violence and things like that. That is kind of where I'm at. And, you know, the Martin Luther King thing, it's tough because for me, you know, I think millennials, we have this a little bit of different kind of thing going on. I talk to my parents and it's so different from where we think. And for me, I think that, you know, we say, well, Martin got shot. So clearly the peaceful thing wasn't as impactful as we had hoped. I mean, he did make an impact, absolutely. But it clearly was something that still wasn't appreciated. You know, his daughter posted how, you know, he was the most hated man in America at the time. He you know, and so it's a really tough thing. And it's not to say that it's okay that those things are happening. Absolutely, it's devastating for a lot of people. But it's just seeing the layers, I think, would help people kind of understand that this is more than just about a racial riot. This is the pandemic and the economic collapse and the government not, you know, being a leader in the way they should. And it's just, it's very tough for a lot of people.
I think you summed it up.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, you know, I felt like I wish I would have never saw that video so that I could keep all of the feelings that I grew up with, all the feelings from all the other deaths suppressed. Cause I did that with my father's death, my mother's death, like suppressed it. And acting has been an outlet for me where I can express emotions safely behind the camera, right? Or on stage. A lot of people don't have that outlet like that, an artistic outlet. So I think that once they were able to, from the pandemic, being stuck in the house, just seeing all of this and then this event, like we literally watched a man take another man's life with no remorse whatsoever, no heart, no soul in his eye. And the first reaction is, I want to do something. But then I'm like, I can't, what can I do? I can't do nothing. Like, there's nothing I can do. I wish that I could convict the man, charge him with murder, send him away for life, or even the death penalty for him, but I can't. Like, it's not in my power to do anything. So I think you got millions of people just like feeling like there's nothing they can do. So they're expressing themselves in different ways. And then you have all these different, everybody has agendas. There's so many different people out here with different agendas and they see their opportunists. They see opportunistic ways to impact and get their agenda across. But what I hope doesn't happen is that we don't forget that this, they took this man's life like on camera. Like you see this. And we've seen it happen to so many other people with no convictions, there's been no justice for taking these people's lives. And you can't bring these people back. Their lives are gone. They're dead. And now I feel like the leaders of our country, they need to come together and live up to the justice system and find justice for those that were murdered. That's what needs to happen. And like, we getting caught up in the looting and the rioting, and it's almost like it's a diversion away from what the true fact is. You witnessed it. Everybody witnessed this. Everybody saw it. Everybody who's breathing saw this video of this man's life being taken. He was murdered. He was murdered. Now bring swift justice upon those that murdered them. That's all that needs to happen. But we're more concerned about stopping all these people looting stores, taking products and goods. Who cares? These businesses are going to get help, especially these large businesses. They've taken the stimulus money anyway. Let's find justice for the people that were murdered. That's where the focus should be.
I agree. I think that that should be the focus. But what I would also like to see is more people get involved in the political system. I would love to see more people getting involved in the police force, you know, because if you're taking an active part in an active role, that you won't allow that to occur. And some of the people that I've spoken to about this subject, my question goes back to them, okay, what part are you taking in your local community? Change starts on a local level, you know, so I see both sides and I agree with you 100%. I ran for Long Beach City Council in the March 3rd primary election. I would have loved to see more people get involved and try to make a difference before something occurs. Like, that's my main thing, is like be a part of the change before something like this happens. Go in, you know, join the police force, join, you know, be a politician, be a part of the change. Like, that's my main thought. But I do agree with you 100%. I just would love to see more people become involved, get their hands dirty, be a part of the solution.
Yeah, now, like, now's a good time to watch your leaders, to mm-hmm. see how they act, how they react. Then you're going to know who's really for you. And then we have to exercise our power to register to vote and then go out and vote. Mm-hmm. Even if you think it's meaningless, you feel like your vote won't mean anything. But that's all part of the whole agenda. But get out and vote. Mm-hmm. You know, watch right now what leaders speak out. What leaders, like, we shouldn't have to depend on just the regular citizens to be rioting. We need to hear the leaders and what the leaders do to make swift justice happen in these situations. And then that's who we need to put in office, those people that are for us.
Mm-hmm. And I think that all this is happening has a lot to do with people's innermost thoughts and innermost needs. So this looting and all these things that are happening, if we had a culture that breeded empathy and that took care of its people first, many people wouldn't even get to that thought process. But from the very beginning, our system has never thought for the greater good of people. It's always been based on an elite specific group of people. And that's what the problem is. I mean, because it's all the innermost thoughts and energy that people have. And if we had trust in our system as people, you know, we would not, I don't believe that the things that are happening would happen in the way that they do. You know, and it's shown in other countries, they don't have these same types of mindsets in their citizens, because they trust in each other and their systems.
I think that was well said. There is hope for the future.
Yes.
Look at our young people. I mean, yes, I love it. I love it. I love it. Now, Nakia, I call you Nakia.
Okay. I get it all the time.
I hate messing up people's names, especially like a name like Sharifa. But I just wanted to kind of, I see you sitting there, I see you observing. I just wanted to bring you back into the conversation because you have a military background. Most likely you look at things a little bit different from the average layman. But what have you seen, or what are some of your thoughts when you look at what's going on in society?
I agree completely with what Sabria had said in regards to, we're not looking out for our people. To the left and to the right of us. In the military, we're always taught to look out for those to the left and right of us, in front of us, behind us. We're just constantly taught that you work together as a team. And I don't see a team in America right now. It's completely missing. And I remember very vividly when I was on my entrepreneurship journey. I was 2.5 years in. I had to make a critical decision on, do I continue to fund paying into my office rent, or do I put that money towards my car note? What did I choose? I chose my office rent. And so I lost my vehicle after putting $17,000 into my vehicle, and the bank just took it. And, you know, I said to them, I'm living off of 1/4 of an income. You guys were used to be paying, you know, this exorbitant amount because I was in the military. I'm not in the military now. I'm an entrepreneur. This is my income. This is what I have to sustain myself. I've spent $17,000 into this vehicle. Will you give me this time to, you know, get these payments situated? No, we're taking the vehicle. There is not a team effort in America. It's, I'm all for myself. I'm all for this company. And this is the way that it has to be. And it just completely threw me off that I can go to 2 tours overseas, serve my country, and then this corporate system just completely wipe all that out. So what I think when it comes to America is we really have to get back onto a team effort. If we're going to host this, you know, grand old American system, raise this flag, we need to really put some support behind it and show team effort in this country.
I've seen a lot, you know, people over property. And I mean, it's like, yeah, it is. And some companies have come out and even said, like, don't focus on this. Like, I mean, Target, I think, had us, you know, like, don't worry about that. Like, and it, like, in some ways, some of these businesses are going to be able to claim insurance money, not even the big ones, but like smaller ones who were going to go under because of the lack of support during the pandemic are now going to be able to claim insurance money so that they can stay afloat. I mean, it's such an interesting situation with all of these factors, but it definitely comes into, we don't act like a community. It's all about, you know, this, we would talk a lot about, like, you know, Sabria will know, like, the lack mindset versus the abundance mindset. And when we function from a lack mindset, we hoard and we try and keep all this stuff to ourselves and protect our own assets and stuff instead of recognizing there could be enough if we would just think of it that way. And exactly what you were saying, Sharif, about getting involved and looking to our leaders. I'm in Chicago, not suburbs. I'm actually in Chicago. So, like, there's a lot going on here as well. And we recently had a major shift in our political system, and a lot of people got out and voted, and we have a number of new aldermen. We have a number of, we have a new mayor and a new governor. And the response, I've been proud of the amount of work we did to change that political dynamic, because I see what they're saying and then the actions that follow. And of course, not everybody agrees, but overall, it's immensely better. It's different working from within a system than outside of a system. I see change happens from two different components. There's the internal change, and then there's the external change, and they engage differently, but they're both really important and necessary. Nikki, I'm really interested to know, coming from a military background, especially kind of all this talk about, like, the militarization of police and that dynamic, and hearing you talk about the community component in the military and coming out and kind of having this culture shock, what your perspective is on the police, like that situation we have there.
Yeah, there's definitely not what I notice in the police force, rules of engagement that they have to, you know, follow, or code of conduct like there is for the military. When you are deployed downrange, there are specific rules that you have to follow when you're engaging enemy combatants. And it seems as if in the police force here in America, we don't have those same protocols in place, where you should know where to escalate and where to de-escalate your force. And I've been very strongly advocating, probably since 2016, that when the police forces are doing some of these heinous acts, that the community needs to go in as a whole and stop their salaries, because you pay their salaries. Do not pay your property taxes. Do not pay your state taxes. Don't file any taxes. Those will go to their salaries. So stop it. And then you engage in those community polices and say, these are the trainings that we want to see the police force take. Mm-hmm. And once those trainings are completed, then you file your taxes. Then you pay your property tax. Put a halt on all money until they're able to get their act right, because that's their livelihood. And if they're taking lives, they're not thinking about others' livelihoods in those moments.
I like that. I think that was wonderful. I mean, to me, that's another solution. And that's a solution that will hit the people who are doing these things directly in their pockets. For the officers with George Floyd, they need more than that. I want to see those people actually be prosecuted. I don't want them fired. Fired, that does nothing for them, because they just about to go over to another town and get a new job and go back to their lives as normal. These people murdered a man. and they need to be held accountable. But I love the way that you are looking at other ways than to just go outside and protest. Though that's what I'm looking for, and what I hope a lot of people are looking for is solutions on how we can make a difference and how we can make this better.
Yeah, money talks real loud to people. When you got that money rolling, it talks real loud. I mean, even when it comes to supporting certain businesses, people see what happens. Whenever you cancel a business and they are going down, they feel it. I mean, I've seen it happen. You know, people in my hometown of Fayetteville, where I'm originally from, posting heinous racist things on their social medias. And then they're confused when all of a sudden no one wants to come to their business. They're upset. Now they're putting out the apology post after you just said, you know, let the market house where they sold slaves burn down with the people in it, you know, stuff like that. You just can't do it. And so I think that you're right. Money does talk. And we all have that's one thing that we all have control over. I always teach people there's things you can control, there's things you cannot control, and there's things you can influence. And we all have some control or influence over our money in different ways where we can decide where we place it.
Absolutely. I was having a discussion the other day with my cousin about the burning that they, I was like, I can't believe they burned down an entire police station. Like they burned the police station down. But then, we were saying that it will be rebuilt. And I said, okay, yeah, we know they're going to get the money from the government to rebuild this police station. But what I hope in my prayer is that they, when they're rebuilding, they keep in mind the reason why it was burned down to begin with. And so unless they learn that lesson, even when they rebuild it, if they don't change their ways, people are going to burn it down again. And it could be a vicious cycle until they make a change and they make a difference and they rebuild with a new mindset that they are here to serve the people, to protect and serve the people. So we are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And I'm so grateful for all of you who took the time to actually, you know, be here and to be open and authentic and just, you know, because I think Valerie said it, but I didn't know what to expect either. You know, I was kind of feeling like, oh my God, Sharifa, you know, I don't know what's going to happen on this show. Are people going to be yelling, screaming, crying, cursing, mad, angry? You know, maybe no one shows up. And I was like, okay, if no one shows up, I'm going back to bed. That's how I solved that problem. So I just appreciate that all of you showed up. You're here to tell your story, speak your thoughts, give from the heart. So what I like to do at the end of every show is just allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who's watching live, as well as everyone who's watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance. And we're going to start with you, Sabria.
So for a long time, I was a chameleon sellout. That's what I called myself. I wrote a whole blog about it. I changed and morphed my values to fit the comfort and the needs of others. I made myself small in order to help others feel good about themselves. So if you learn anything from today, is when you step into who you are and you step into what's right, you will never be wrong and you will never go wrong. So always feel strong enough to be true to who you are and continue to do great work. If you ever want to go on a virtual wellness retreat, we're virtual now. It's amazing. I'm loving the work I'm doing. Check out project-passport.com. Thank you all so much.
Are you going to keep doing the virtual events after all of this?
Yes, yes. It's staying. It's here to stay.
So are you going to offer both or are you going to remain on virtual?
Yeah, okay. We're doing both. It opened a whole new leg that I didn't know I had. So now it's both.
That's wonderful. It's a blessing and every curse. Nikia.
I guess my message for ending up today would just be practice resiliency. There's going to be adversities that come at you from left and right. You're going to go up and down these hills and battles. But keeping adversity and resiliency forefront in your mind and just pushing forward and driving through to a better day is the best outcome that I could say you could have. There will be challenges ahead, but just keep pushing forward.
I just want to mention your business real quick. Tell us a little bit about your business and where people can find you.
InnovativeSupplies.net. It's a stationery company. We're going to be branching into more school supplies like crayons, pencil boxes, book bags, and things of that nature. But right now, our bread and butter is making stationery notebooks here in America.
Mm-hmm. And you utilize, you said students and the youth.
Right. I'm looking to expand that to veterans as well so that they can have a mission and a purpose when they leave the military. But for right now, it is at-risk youth that I employ because I don't like that label of at-risk. So I'm, you know, really strong on getting them underneath my wing and giving them some mentorship and some guidance and some leadership skills so they can have something to add to a resume before they leave high school, because a lot of high schools students don't go to college after high school. And so with my background being HR, I want to help them develop a resume and show them what they've learned just from working with me and adding that to their resume.
I think that's so beautiful. Thank you for that, Valerie.
I would just say that from today and going forward, just to know that you matter and your voice is important, and to take that time to look inside, like Sabria was saying about taking those 2 weeks. If you're uncertain, if you're having big feelings, like take that for, of any of the things that are going on right now, because there are a lot of things to have big feelings about. And especially like as a mom raising small children, everything that's going on, it breaks my heart. And I think it's important to allow that breaking to happen because that can open us up to growth. I know that, you know, that breakdown has to happen before the breakthrough. I don't know that it has to be as painful, but sometimes it is. And we're in a time of transformation. And so to ask yourself, like, go deeper. What do I believe in? What are my values? What bothered me about that? What am I thinking about that? Asking those powerful questions of yourself, those open questions, those questions that make you look deeper, are the ones that are going to help you discern what the next step forward is. And it's okay to not know where we're going, like the exact direction. A lot of people say, I wish we had better leaders to tell us where to go and what we should be doing. And it's like, you are the leaders. Be a leader, own that. And that means doing your research. That means listening to others, listening to your inner self, and taking that time to do that so that you can put your foot in front of you and learn. And you're going to do it imperfectly, and that's okay. And just keep taking the steps. The last conversation I was on with Sharifa, there was that, and I'm going to blank on her name, but she's mentioned courage isn't a feeling, it is an attitude. Mm-hmm. So don't wait to feel courageous. Just, you know, that confidence, it's not about feeling confident. It's about taking that attitude of confidence and knowing that you're going to do the best you can in any given moment and putting your foot forward and learning and putting the next foot forward and learning.
I think that was well said. Thank you for that. Sir Brody, what do you have for us?
I guess I would say I always go back to my acting and training. One of the techniques we do as actors is we learn how to breathe to help with your action, with your acting, and become centered to be your character. I would tell everybody to take a moment to just breathe and kind of reconnect yourself, whatever faith that you have or your religious beliefs, take a minute to activate your faith and just breathe and connect and center to that before you react to certain things. And that way you can react out of your heart and for the love of other people. So I guess my thought would be just to take a moment to breathe. Like, so much going on right now. And like, even my mind's everywhere right now, but I have to take that moment just to breathe. Like, I've been sitting outside this entire time for this conversation because I just wanted the fresh air. I just want to breathe for a minute and relax. Because the sun's going to shine tomorrow. You know, it's going to be another day. Like, one of the things the pastors always say is, joy is going to come in the morning. And whether you believe it or not, it will. Joy will come in the morning. So let's just relax, let's breathe, let's center ourselves, reconnect with our faith. And then let's make calculated decisions to move society forward, to move America forward.
Thank you. I couldn't have said that better. Thank you, everyone, for your words. Thank you for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live, as well as everyone who's watching it in the archives. I definitely appreciate your support, but I also appreciate you going ahead and share the show, because we have our guests who have come together in order to be able to assist you and provide you with words of encouragement. Please support our guests. Check out their websites. Follow them on social media. Follow what they have going on, because they are here to help you. And if you are interested in being a guest, please visit the website at AskSharifah.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., everyone have a safe, a blessed, and a peaceful day. Bye now.